Good morning. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jennifer Gilb for the appellant Jeffrey Anderson. Your Honors, in New York versus Ferber and Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition, the Supreme Court established a framework for protecting First Amendment rights while still guarding against the very important interest in protecting children. What Ferber and Free Speech Coalition found were unprotected are materials involving performances or reproductions of live performances of actual children engaging in sexually explicit conduct. In the universe of other types of conduct that might involve children that are not obscene retain First Amendment protection. The morphing provision in this case, that is at issue in this case, really disrupts that balance, because what it says is it defines child pornography as materials produced without the participation of children. And in doing so, the provision becomes unmoored from the justifications identified in Ferber in New York versus Ferber and Free Speech Coalition. And when the compelling interest is no longer present, and then the provision is not narrowly tailored to the compelling interest, and the statute can't be the basis of a criminal prosecution. So that's why I'm here today, to ask that you vacate Mr. Anderson's conviction. I wanted to talk specifically about Ferber and Free Speech Coalition, but just to give you a little background again about what the images we're talking about. We have an image of an adult couple having sex, and then another image that the defendant already had of an 11-year-old girl. He basically photoshopped the two images so that the 11-year-old girl's face appeared over the face of the female part of the couple having sex. And this is the basis for his prosecution. Now, the compelling interests identified in Ferber and Free Speech Coalition were, I would say, you could boil them down to two. First, the prevention of sexual abuse of children. And second, the elimination of images which are the product of that abuse. The court said that those two go together, that they're intrinsically related to one another. What we don't have here is the sexual abuse of children. We have an image. We have an image of an identifiable child. She's 11 years old. But we don't have the other component that makes that image the product of sexual abuse. And that, Your Honors, is what I would say distinguishes this case most from United States versus Bach, which I believe is the case that the government will rely on when Mr. Norris has the opportunity to address you. In Bach, we had an image of a child who was engaged in sexually explicit conduct. And superimposed over that child's image was another image of a child, the face of a child. And the Eighth Circuit said in Bach that those two, again, combine, address the very compelling interests that are discussed in Ferber and Free Speech Coalition. Again, you have children, both the image of abuse and the image that was taken from another photo involve children. And when you combine those two, when you marry the two, you get the same kind of problem that the Ferber Court and the Free Speech Coalition Court recognized was a compelling state interest. Here, you don't have the two together. You simply have adult sexual explicit conduct, and then you have an innocent child's face superimposed. There's no question if
we were to agree with you, would we be creating a circuit split with the Second and Sixth Circuit?
You would be, yes.
And so what's wrong with their reasoning in those cases?
Well, their reasoning is basically wrong because I think they take the leap from Ferber and Free Speech Coalition, and they say that what they do is they expand the interest that the government that's identified in Ferber and Free Speech Coalition. Again, I identified the two interests in those two cases, prevention of sexual abuse and elimination of images which are the product of that abuse.
And what they identify, I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the physical and psychological well-being of the child.
Because of...
Isn't that a compelling interest or not?
Well, it's not the one that's recognized by the Supreme Court in general. I mean, it's linked specifically to the conduct that the child is forced to perform it and engage in. So what Hodling and Boland did in those two cases was they generalized the interest. And I understand that. I mean, protection of children. You know, who can say, no, that's not an important interest? But that's not the interest that the court in Ferber or Free Speech Coalition said was sufficient to justify a speech restriction.
Now, in Ferber and Free Speech Coalition, they were talking, weren't they, about categorical exclusions from the First Amendment?
Yes. I mean, they were...
As opposed to a strict scrutiny analysis.
Well, I really think that implicitly in Free Speech Coalition, the court did apply a strict scrutiny analysis.
Well, what I mean is that when they've upheld child pornography prohibitions like in Ferber, wasn't the court saying that there's a narrow area where speech doesn't have any protection at all under the First Amendment? And
right.
Child pornography, as defined there, is one of those categories.
Right, but they define it very narrowly.
I understand. That's
yes.
Your argument. You're saying this, what Congress here defined as child pornography, is beyond the scope of what Ferber said is categorically outside the First Amendment.
That's right.
But then you say strict scrutiny must apply because it's not a categorical exclusion.
Right.
So would this psychological interest that the other courts of appeals talked about be a compelling interest that could be considered in a strict scrutiny analysis?
Well, I think it could be, but I think the conclusion would have to be that it's not enough. And I come to that argument by looking at what they did in Free Speech Coalition. The last part of the opinion basically addressed several secondary interests that the government said were important interests and things that we needed to recognize as a reason for prohibiting a certain amount of speech. And in each of those cases, even though the court recognized, you know, they understood the intent behind the concern for the children, it did not allow those, it did not elevate those interests to the level of the interests identified in Ferber.
But was that now remind me, wasn't that an overbreadth problem in Free Speech Coalition? It was a facial challenge, not an as-applied challenge. Right.
Well, it was, but what happened is they had findings that Congress had made saying, well, if we allow this kind of child pornography, this will happen, or pedophiles will follow this conduct, and they had, so they advanced interests similar to what the psychological harm interests that you're identifying here. They advanced those kinds of interests in Free Speech Coalition, and the Supreme Court said that's not enough. What we need to protect against are children who are being abused and the images that are the product of that abuse. We understand other people may take these images and suggest things or do things with them, and we don't approve of that, but that's not enough. It's not enough of a compelling interest to justify the exclusion of speech.
So it would be an interesting one reason to create a circuit split would be to put the Supreme Court to its test, see whether they say they would agree that the psychological image damage caused by this situation is not a compelling interest.
Well, I anticipate that we will try to do that if we're on the losing end of this. But I guess the point is that I think you've nailed what I've been trying to say. You recognize that it would cause a circuit split, but the reason that I don't think you need to follow Hodling or
I'm not saying that we do that just to give the Supreme Court a chance to take
tee it up. But really, it would cause a circuit split, but I think the reason that they're wrong is found in Free Speech Coalition, in which several interests, all of which would protect children if you followed them far enough down the road, were rejected as sufficiently compelling reasons to justify the prohibition on speech.
Was there any argument raised here about the interpretation of subsection C, 2256? I guess it's 8C, and whether this image falls within the definition? Because typically, if you raise a constitutional question, you might first think about whether the statute should be construed in a way to avoid a constitutional problem.
Your Honor, I don't really think that that was the focus of any of the arguments previous to this. And it's certainly not my focus because I don't really think...
So you think this is an image in which it appears that an identifiable minor is engaging in sexually explicit conduct? You don't see an argument that that the statute should be construed to exclude this image because the minor is not the one engaging in the conduct?
There is some language in other parts of the statute that talk about indistinguishable from, you know, from a child engaging in sexually explicit conduct. I guess I do see your point. I think you could argue that this provision doesn't even apply because nobody would take this as a child engaging in sexually explicit conduct. It's not...
Well, it's a question whether that's been raised by... I guess it hasn't been raised by the defendant here.
Yes, I mean, I have to tell you, honestly, I don't think that it's been raised.
Have you seen that in any case law? Have you seen that issue discussed in any of the precedents here?
Well, in the state court cases, as I recall, I believe it was Parker versus State. I'd have to go back and look at the name of the case. Yes, Parker versus State. That's the case out of Florida. There did seem to be quite a bit of emphasis on the fact that nobody would mistake the image in that case, which was very similar to this image, as a child's body. You know, everybody understood that the bodies were adults. So,
and therefore,
therefore, they supported our position.
They said it was a First Amendment violation?
Well, in Parker, they really didn't. I have to be honest, Parker, they... Of all the cases I have, that's the one that relied the most on the state statute. But they found it important anyway to mention because, and I think you can take from that a suggestion that can enter into your analysis as to whether that provision even applies. And even though it wasn't raised before, as far as I know, you are all allowed under your own discretion to narrowly... to interpret the statute in a way that does not violate First Amendment interests. So, you know, if that's the preferred way to do it, I wouldn't object to that. But I have to be honest that it wasn't really the subject of the previous briefing.
Could we only do that if it was patently obvious that it wasn't a child's body?
I think so. And I feel very confident in saying that that's the case here. The child's face is clearly an 11-year-old girl, and the bodies are not childlike. I see my yellow light's on. I'm going to save us a few minutes for rebuttal.
Very well. We'll hear from the government. Mr. Norris.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Michael Norris, and I represent the appellee, the United States. The district court properly denied the motion to dismiss that was based on a First Amendment challenge. I think it's real clear that child pornography is not protected under the First Amendment. Child pornography itself is not protected under the First Amendment. It exists fully outside the protection of the First Amendment.
Well, child pornography defined how, though?
Child pornography that is outside under Ferber and everything else would be actual children, is what they were deciding at that time. Since then, you've had the PROTECT Act, you've had the change in the statute, you've had the subsequent change since... Free Speech Coalition, but child pornography is now defined under 2256 sub 8, very similar to as it was before, which is a visual depiction that has been created, adapted, or modified to appear that an identifiable minor is engaging in sexually explicit conduct. So that's the definition at subsection C. I don't recall it as being all that different from the definition at subsection C prior to the Ashcroft. I remember the Free Speech Coalition case indicating that the subject at issue at free speech under the definitions had to do with virtual reality and had to do with adults portraying minors in sexually explicit conduct. And because there weren't any actual identifiable minors, that's where Free Speech Coalition said that was improper, inappropriate, or that's one of the limited areas where it's protected under the First Amendment.
Well, isn't it any minors that are engaging in sexual activity?
Yes.
Any minor. We don't have a minor engaging in sexual activity here, do we?
Well, we have a minor who's is implicated, and that's what you have, and that's what Bach talks about.
We have a minor. Well, Bach's different, though.
How so? I'm not sure that it is. I think Bach is controlling. I agree with the district court that Bach is controlling. Now, you may not see it that way, but if it in fact is controlling...
Well, tell me why it is, because I thought it was just the opposite situation, that it was a child's body, not an adult's body.
Well, and I think as the district court said...
Because there's actually a child who's engaged, whether it's the face or not, different question, but
right.
it's an actual child who is engaging in sexual activity.
Well, that's true, but as the district court indicated, that's and as Doe and Hodling will suggest, that's really a distinction without a difference. That's not... That's not what Bach controls or holds or comes down to. You do have two different, and it's probably as good a point as any to explain the difference between the two. In Bach, you have a minor naked sitting in a tree with the head of an entertainer whose initials were AC superimposed on that body. In this particular case, you have what appear to be adult, but how can you tell an adult? I mean, the definition of a minor is 18 or under. Those could be, or at least one of them might have been, an individual close to the age of 18, but it doesn't really matter. Let's just say that they're adults, and let's concede that they probably were adults.
You pretty much have conceded that,
yeah,
haven't you?
I have.
Okay.
I have. But, I mean, I'm just saying it's hard to make that determination when you're trying to make a determination on body, which is why a lot of the child pornography cases rely on prepubescence.
So tell me why Bach controls, though.
This is why, let me get to why Bach controls. It's in Bach, you have, we've described what the picture looks like. We've described, probably the easiest way for me to describe why Bach controls is to go to Hodling and Doe. And what they indicate about Bach. In Bach, the court based this decision on the presence of a minor's recognizable face. Although there is no contention that the nude body actually is that of the entertainer, AC, or that he was involved in the production of that image, a lasting record has been created of him, an identifiable minor child, seemingly engaged in sexually explicit activity. We agree with the Eighth Circuit that the interests of actual minors are implicated when their faces are used in creating morphed images that make it appear they are performing sexual acts.
What do you do, though, with the discussion in Ferber and particularly this recent case, U.S. against Stevens, which is the animal cruelty case from the Supreme Court, where they discussed child pornography and they said the reason that it's categorically excluded is that it's intrinsically related to the underlying child abuse?
I understand that.
How would that rationale to this conduct if there's no underlying child abuse?
Well, I think there is underlying child abuse, and I think the underlying child abuse in this particular case goes to the 11-year-old stepsister of the defendant. It is her image. It's her reputational harm. It's her psychological harm. It's any emotional harm that flows from this particular type of child pornography. It is her
well,
face.
All right, if you take that to mean what they mean by child abuse, I understand the argument, but you could read Stevens to mean that it was underlying criminal conduct.
And there is some of that language in Bach as well. I concede that it talks in the context of there are two individuals. There's a crime that's implicated, and that would be the posing of the lower part of the body. And then there's the emotional issues and that relates to the head, which is that of the entertainer. But the significance and the discussion leads to that of the entertainer and how he is damaged as time goes by, how his reputation can be harmed, how there is a picture that will go on in perpetuity of him seemingly engaged in sexually explicit conduct posed naked in a tree. And that's what we have here, is that the defendant has created an image of child pornography. He has created an image of child pornography involving his half-sister. His half-sister, now going forward, had that been transmitted to other individuals, and in fact was transmitted to her, or attempted to transmit it to her, but because the State Patrol had already taken over her Facebook account at that time, that would have caused emotional problems. It would have caused clearly psychological issues, And it's something that, if circulated, would continue to do that throughout. And those are compelling interests. Those are compelling interests that the government has an interest in supervising, in being able to monitor, as well as to be able to preclude and prosecute if need be. Again.
Well, is that an argument that the prosecution, that the statute satisfies strict scrutiny? Or are you still arguing categorical exclusion?
That's more of a categorical exclusion argument. And I think if you
What's your view on whether strict scrutiny is satisfied here, if we conclude that the categorical exclusion is narrower?
I believe it hasn't really been briefed. It hasn't been briefed, and as I stand here, I would indicate to you that I think strict scrutiny, the statute passes strict scrutiny as well. I mean, it's written in such a fashion to address post-Ashcroft what the concerns of the Supreme Court were. The Supreme Court in Ashcroft, in dicta, and granted it's dicta, indicated that the definitional statute at C, the predecessor of this, which has been tightened up since then, was probably okay because morphed images are a little bit cruder, and that morphed images bring in the implications of emotional harm, reputational harm, and those harms that Congress should be allowed to prescribe. If we go past Bach, and again, I assert that Bach is controlling. I assert that Bach is controlling because the distinction that is made is really a distinction without a difference. But should that distinction have a difference, then we start looking at the other circuits that have addressed this. We look at the Second Circuit, which is the Hotling case. We look at the Sixth Circuit, which is the Doe versus Boland matters. Those matters, like this particular matter, are adults engaged in sexually explicit conduct with the photos of minors placed over the bodies of those individuals or the adults engaging in sexually explicit conduct. So it's right on point. There's actually another circuit.
Go ahead and finish that.
I was just going to say that within the last couple of weeks, or at least in September, I was made aware as I was preparing for this argument of another circuit opinion, and that's the Ninth Circuit case of Shoemaker versus Taylor. It had to do with, it was up on habeas relief, and the holding of that indicated that morphed images of children engaging in sexual activity were not protected speech under the First Amendment. There is no clearly established Supreme Court law holding that images of real children morphed to look like child pornography constitute protected speech. I can get you a Rule 28J letter this afternoon.
If you would, please.
That will take care of that citation, but I interrupted you.
Okay, so the cases from the other circuits, are they performing a categorical or a strict scrutiny analysis?
My read of how they're doing this is more categorical. I would say that it's more of a categorical because they talk about the reputational harm. They talk about that type of harm and danger. So that's how I read it. As far as the image itself, as far as the facts in this particular case are concerned, it is really straightforward. They're set forth in the brief. There's really no reason to go through them in specific detail here. There is an interesting, even the plea colloquy was very succinct and to the point with regard to the defendant. Mr. Anderson was asked specifically, if I can get to it here. During his Rule 11 plea colloquy, he was asked specifically, did you use your computer to place a picture of your half-sister's face on top of the image of an adult male and adult female engaging in sexual intercourse? Answer, yes. When you looked at that picture, could you see it was your half-sister? Answer, yes. During that same exchange with the court, he admitted that he sent the image using the alias of Bob Shepard and that he knew that his half-sister was 11 years old at the time that he sent it to her. Just of note, the half-sister lived separately in a different city than he did, as well as he didn't really have much of a relationship with his siblings as is indicated by the pre-sentence report. Just like in Bach, just like in Doe, just like in Hotelling, what we have here is he manufactured an image, and that image appeared that an 11-year-old girl, his half-sister, was engaging in vaginal intercourse with an adult male. That is the conduct that is prescribed by the statute. It is not protected by the First Amendment. The district court acted properly. I suggest that Bach is controlling. If Bach's not controlling, I would ask the court to look to the Second, the Sixth, as well as the Ninth Circuit decisions that have resolved this issue.
Well, what if it's patently obvious that it's an adult body? Because then it's not a child engaging in sexual activity.
You still have what appears to be a child who fits that body, or at least a child's face who fits that body, and you have an identifiable actual child. And that
but
is
not, not one engaging in sexual activity. You know, it's depicting somebody, but it's not an actual child engaging in sexual activity.
I agree that the torso or whatever, but again, that's the same issue that got presented to the Sixth Circuit, the Ninth Circuit, as well as the Second Circuit. And it's
but not in Bach.
But not in Bach. The facts are different as far as Bach's, but it's I agree with the district court in this particular case that it's a distinction without a difference. If that distinction does have a difference, then I'm asking the court to look at the other circuits that have ruled on this, and no circuits have found contrary to the district court's opinion. Unless there are any questions, I thank you for your time.
Very well. Rebuttal? Yes.
Thank you. Judge Colleton, with respect to your point about what is sexual abuse, especially with the Stevens case, when they say child pornography is excluded from First Amendment protection because it records sexual abuse, I would suggest that, although I don't mean to sound callous towards sexual or towards psychological or reputational harm, there is that those harms are do not rise to the same level of direct harm to the child as the actual abuse itself. And I don't think you can divorce or discount the language in the Supreme Court cases that discuss images as the product of abuse, as records of a crime. That's not what we have here. So, again, I don't think that Free Speech Coalition gets you to the point that the government wants you to get to recognize reputational harm as a form of sexual abuse.
So what First Amendment value would we be protecting if we adopt your view? The First Amendment right of the Jeffrey Andersons of the world to, in effect, engage in reputational abuse.
And you may be able to address that in other ways. For example, the government here had other opportunities to address his conduct. But when we're talking about restricting the First Amendment, there has to be something else. Despite
the fact
that
what about obscenity? They didn't raise obscenity.
They didn't raise obscenity. I'm not sure it would rise to that level. But obscenity, if they could make that showing, then it would be excluded as well. But on a separate basis, not as child pornography. And just kind of to drive the point home, although I think you all understand that Mr. Norris said that this photo made it appear that Mr. Anderson's half-sister was engaged in sexual activity. I don't think that's what it made it appear. It made it appear that somebody doctored a photo. And there was no question that there was not, children engaging in sexual activity in that. So I think that's an important, that's the core of the case. I see my red light is on, and I won't take up any more time.
Any more questions?
Ask that you vacate the conviction.
We thank both sides for your arguments, and the case is submitted. We'll take it under consideration.